welcome back to another week of the Dynamic Duo Show, right here on DCNLive.com. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm on here every Monday and Friday. Co-host Jim Fetzer comes on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Well, as my regular listeners know, I try to always bring on the most interesting guests who have points of view and information to share that's outside the mainstream, but of some significance. And we're going to continue with that tradition today, but we're moving into an area that I'm not familiar with and that I haven't really done any shows yet about, and that is astrology. Now, my usual my knowledge of astrology is so limited that about, you know, all I can say when somebody brings up the topic at a party is, well, you know, we Aquarians don't believe in astrology. That's about it. But I am interested in the possibility that there is some kind of meaning in these cycles and cosmic phenomena that astrology studies. I take an interest, but I'm utterly ignorant, and so I'm hoping to learn something today. My guest today is Bruce Schofield. He is an author of 12 books and numerous articles on astrology. He has an MA in social science and a BA in history. His interests include psychological astrology, electional astrology, which sounds interesting since I'm a candidate for Congress at barrettforcongress.us. Although whether victory is in the stars for me or not, I don't know. And he's also interested in Mesoamerican astrology, which is a topic that we'll be focusing on some today because he has studied closely the Mayan calendar. Now, recently I was out campaigning at a fair here in western Wisconsin, and I met some folks who are really concerned about the Mayan calendar. They're concerned that the world is going to end in 2012, which is the end date of the long count of the Mayan calendar. Precisely, I guess it's December 21st, 2012. Is the world really going to end then? Well, the heck if I know. So I'm going to have to ask my guest, Bruce Schofield, and I'm going to have to ask him a whole lot of other things because, as I said, I'm pretty ignorant in this whole area. So welcome, Bruce Schofield. I hope I'll be a little less ignorant after 2 hours have gone by. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, you're welcome.
Yeah, it's. I read your article, The Long and Short of the Mayan Calendar. It's. It was published in the Mountain Astrologer a couple of years back. It's pretty. It's fascinating. It's the furthest thing from the kind of cloudy New Age stuff that we often see on this topic. But you know, maybe before we get into the Mayan calendar, Bruce, could you give me a very brief pitch for what astrology is all about?
Well, I think probably the best definition, working definition, would be astrology is a mapping technique for dynamic systems.
Hmm.
And it originated, well, let's put it this way, some of the earliest stuff goes back thousands and thousands, you know, of years to the Neolithic, counting moon cycles and so on. But it became focused in the, late Babylonian period, and through the Hellenistic period, it coalesced as like a body of knowledge that was used to analyze processes, most often being a person's life. But it was also associated with or used to analyze weather and climate and so on. In fact, there are traditionally two main branches of astrology that were defined back in classical times, ancient times. What's called natural astrology that deals with tides, weather events, climate cycles, plagues, earthquakes, volcanoes, and so on. It's really very much geoscience. In fact, I argue that it was the first geoscience. And the other branch is called judicial astrology that concerns itself with the human being and consciousness. And in that area, judicial astrology, you have natal charts where you cast a map of the sky, basically a time slice for the moment that a person is separate from the mothership and starts functioning with their own organs. In other words, saying there's this period of time that's pretty quick where you emerge from the womb and you're cut off the umbilical cord is cut and you start breathing on your own, and you move from being a water breather to an air breather and so on. This is like a decisive moment. And so the tradition, or at least one tradition in astrology, has been to, you know, look at that time slice at that moment, what was going on right at that moment, and analyze it. And the other branches of judicial astrology are what are called horary, which is answering questions. Somebody asks you a question, and you again use the time slice technique and cast a chart for that time and try to answer the question. And the other one is electional, which you mentioned, and that's the act of choosing a time to commence an event. It's like, you know,
it's not about winning elections.
It could be. In fact, one of the things I do is when candidates announce their candidacy, if I'm paying attention, I try to get that the time that they do it, and you know, I mean, it's hard to say. I usually do it for the moment that they actually say I'm now running for office. But that chart is quite interesting and has been used to predict presidents in the past, and especially it's obvious when so many candidates announce say for president, and so many of them don't make it. And you look at the charts and you find that, you know, these are periods of time where the cycles are not in, you know, it's not consistent with what they want to do.
I should probably schedule a consultation with you, because I'm running a really long shot candidacy, and the only way I'll ever win is if the stars line up in some amazing configuration.
Well, have you formally announced?
Oh, yeah, I announced formally back in the spring.
Then you've already done it.
Yeah.
Then you know, you have to live with that chart. Now, that was your moment of initiation. See, judicial astrology is primarily concerned with the analysis of moments of initiation or key moments in time, and then this time slice technique has been developed for a couple thousand years. It's called the horoscope, view of the hour. Mm-hmm. What we see in the paper is, you know, those are sun sign things, you know, and yeah, they serve a purpose, I suppose, but I wouldn't consider it any more astrology than I would consider Dear Abby to represent the entire field of psychology.
Interesting. Yeah, the idea that moments of initiation, or there are moments that are sort of pregnant with entire futures, makes sense to me intuitively. And I have played around with the I Ching a little bit, although not recently, and found quite an amazing correspondence between the hexagrams that I threw on the number of occasions I did that and the sort of questions I was asking about, and all of that did seem to tie into focusing on a certain exact moment, for instance, when one separates the yarrow stalks. So I intuitively sort of understand what you're talking about here, although I don't have no idea how it plays out in relation to the cosmic cycles that astrologers use.
Well, you're talking about divination, you know, tarot cards, and geomancy, and you know, and most runes, most cultures, ancient cultures, created some kind of divination system. I Ching is one of the most sophisticated ones. And this is a different subject in a lot of ways. Now, not everyone in the field of astrology would agree with me. There are some people that, you know, are trying to develop a metaphysics of astrology that's more along the lines of divination and more firmly planted in the Hermetic or Neoplatonic perspective.
Interesting. I was just suggesting that it's based on the moment. And we've come to the moment pregnant with some commercials. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
My finger on your trigger.
back. This is the Dynamic Duo Show. I'm Kevin Barrett. You're listening to GCNLive.com. And today I'm exploring a whole new subject area, new to me and perhaps new to some of my listeners, and that is astrology. And we'll be getting into the Mayan calendar, a topic which is getting all kinds of people alarmed as they prepare for the possible end of the world, or at least the end of the long count of the Mayan calendar on December 21st, 2012. My guest is Bruce Schofield. He was recommended to me by Lynn Margulis, who is one of the world's leading scientists. She assured me that Bruce is a very sharp scientific mind, as well as an astrologer. So he's a good person to explain to me just what's going on, with astrology. And Bruce, you were saying that, you personally see astrology and divination as very different things, but there are some people who have, sort of lumped them together in a grand unified theory.
Yeah, I think that, you know, what's happened is that, science and, astrology parted ways for number of reasons in the 17th century, although it was a number of astrologers that helped found modern science, like Tycho and Kepler and so on. Even Galileo did horoscopes. But for whatever reason, we have a situation now where we have these self-appointed pitfalls of science, the skeptics, and they viciously attack astrology, which can't fight back. You know, I've been waiting for them to attack organized religion, and they're starting to do that. It's safe for them to do that now, but 20 years ago it wasn't. Anyway, they basically have, you know, made sure astrologers are so marginalized that the field is very much, you know, has sort of an anti-materialistic bent to it, and the metaphysical explanations that are proposed by many astrologers are very, you know, spiritual, and you know, divination is some kind of indication that the universe is all operating as one gigantic organism, which is sort of Neoplatonic. And I'm not going to dismiss all that. I'm just saying that that's not my interest. I'm coming from a scientific standpoint, and I'm limiting myself to you know, analyzing what the subject is to measurable phenomena as much as I can. But at the same time, I can step outside of that circle and be a practitioner and call on my intuition and interpret these time slices such that they're meaningful, pieces of meaningful information for people, just as you said the I Ching information was meaningful to you.
Right. Well, what was weird about it was not just meaningful to me, but it seemed to correspond to things. For instance, the very first time I ever did it, I better not go into what I was asking, but it went from a sunny day when I began, a nice sunny summer day, no sign of any clouds, to only took half an hour or so to do it, and the exact instant I finished, a massive stroke of thunder crashed and made me almost hit the ceiling. I didn't even hear any rumbles coming. And then the I Ching image was of the overthrowing cauldron that goes with the image of thunder, for example. Every time I did it, it came up with something almost nearly that striking.
Well, life is stranger than we can imagine, that's for sure. I went through the 60s. I was out there in Haight-Ashbury, and I altered my consciousness with mind-altering drugs and so on. And you know, it really opened up a different perspective to me, and you know, I'm still interested in the subject of consciousness from kind of a scientific standpoint, but I know that science just can't map out everything, and there's plenty of work to be done. And I think things like divination and astrology will be hot scientific topics maybe in 200 or 300 years from now.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, science is starting to catch up in some of these areas. There's a really interesting book. You mentioned the idea of a sort of conscious universe. There's a book called The Conscious Universe by a guy named Dean Radin, R-A-D-I-N, that I
recommend. I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's a good summary of the evidence for psi, which is overwhelming. I mean, it was even overwhelming in the 60s when the British Encyclopedia of Philosophy, a bunch of hardcore empiricists, did their article on ESP, which, you know, they admitted that clearly the evidence was showing that it does exist. And, of course, Radin then goes back and uses meta-analysis over more than a century's worth of scientific work on psi, and it, you know, proves beyond any reasonable doubt that it's quite real and quite significant. People often, you know, try to say, well, it's such a tiny percentage of difference between the, you know, the psi and the random chance that it doesn't really matter, but he shows that there are actually certain experiments, repeatable ones that have been repeated repeatedly, as it were, over decades, that you get, with the psi, you're getting basically batting, 330, whereas with chance, you're batting 250. And every baseball analyst knows that there's a big difference between batting 330 and batting 250.
Yeah. Well, I think that there have been a number of scientists and thinkers that have recognized that something strange is going on. A good example is Carl Jung, who, with his theory of synchronicity and so on, the collective unconscious, was, trying to explain psychic phenomena. His first paper, before he got involved with Freud, was on psychic phenomena.
That's right. Yeah, there's a story told about them, which I think is actually true. Some, it's debate and say whether it's apocryphal or not, but they were supposedly together in, I think it was Freud's study, and Freud was getting angry about Jung and his crazy psychic ideas, and suddenly there was a loud explosion from the bookshelf, and as it just, and then Jung said, and that was to prove that, in fact, there are these strange things going on, and I predict that there will be another one. And boom, another one happened. And Freud apparently was kind of shaken by that.
Isn't it the window cracking or something?
I don't remember
that story. But the Carl Jung was a very interesting guy. He was more than a psychologist, anthropologist, and mythologist, and so on. He wrote on the I Ching. And he did a lot of work with astrology, studied it. In fact, it was kind of one of his hobbies for most of his life. Freud was not interested in it. He tried to engage Freud in a discussion of it because he thought that by studying astrology, it was a way of accessing the ancient human mind, in which symbols becomes a kind of language. That's another definition of astrology that's been used, a symbolic language. But Jung, maintained an interest in it. His daughter became a fairly well-known astrologer.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I've read a bit on Jung. Actually used some of his stuff in my MA thesis. I didn't know that. All right, we'll be back. I am learning things I didn't know. I'm talking with Bruce Schofield. He's an astrologer, author of 12 books and numerous articles. And we will be getting to that topic, I promise, the Mayan calendar and the possible end of the world on December 21st, 2012. So stick around.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song.
Welcome back to the Dynamic Duo Show right here on GCNLive.com. This is Kevin Barrett delving into a new subject today, at least it's new for me, talking about astrology with Bruce Schofield. He's the author of 12 books and an article, The Long and Short of the Mayan Calendar, which is a very clear explanation of what's going on with the Mayan calendar, which so many people these days are concerned about. So Bruce, there have been all sorts of different astrological systems throughout history. Different cultures have used different symbolic languages involving these cosmic cycles. Do you find that there's something innate in human nature that makes people want to do this?
Well, it comes up in when civilization or when cultures become civilization. We could probably say safely that there are four primary kinds of astrology. There's, this ancient Near East, Greco, ancient Near East astrology. That's what we call Western astrology. That's what we use. There's Hindu astrology, commonly called Vedic astrology today. And then there's an indigenous Chinese astrology as well. But those two traditions were affected to some extent by the Mesopotamian and Greek ideas. Alexander got as far as India. So they're distinct in many most ways, but they still have some overlaps. And then you have Mesoamerica, which developed in more isolation. There were probably some contacts, but to what extent, I'm not sure. But for the most part, it's isolated. And it has its own system. What they all seem to have in common is this drive to bring natural cycles into some kind of form that allows for interpretation and usefulness. You know, it's the drive to create meaning for our life, for our experience, our existence, and also the forces of nature. And people living in the pre-television age and the pre-electric light age were looking at the sky all the time, and they could see these things. They could see the planets moving and conjunctions forming, and they would develop correlations. You know, with the moon would come first. It's logical. It's obvious. People would count things by moons, and they would see that animals would be, you know, come into heat at, you know, the full moon, and or women would, you know, give birth at the full moon, and so on. And this became increasingly more elaborate and complex. And when by the time you get to civilization, you've got essentially a subject matter. You've got all sorts of details worked out.
Interesting.
And, you know, it's the beginning of scientific thinking. You could say that calendars, astrology, and astronomy all developed at the same time as pretty much one subject: timekeeping, astronomy, and interpretive astronomy.
Mm-hmm. And you point out in your article that that Western time is linear, and that some other systems, including the Mayan calendar, are cyclical, which is quite a difference of structure.
It is. I don't think that Western time was always linear, but it's certainly come to be that time's arrow, you know, just this moving forward in time. I think some of the earlier cultures, the Egyptians and the Mesopotamians, were more, cycle-oriented in their thinking about time. And even that occurs in Greek thinking as well. You have these ideas of all the planets lining up and then the universe starting again. That was like a common idea among the Stoics. But yeah, we tend to think that things are just keeping, that we're just moving forward, you know, whereas an ancient culture like the Maya would see things, you know, coming around again to a starting point and then repeating.
And that's partly because we have, in Judeo-Christian culture, especially Christian culture, I guess, we've lined up the timeline sort of with the ostensible birth of Jesus as the kind of center point or point of origin, and then made it into a line. And then in recent centuries, we've developed this idea of progress. The idea is that the direction that we're going into the future is bringing more and more progress and development and technological sophistication. And so that kind of time seems to have really overwhelmed our experience of the cycles of the sun and the moon. And I know that since I came to Islam in 1993, and one of the things I really noticed about practicing as a Muslim is that Muslims are tied into the natural cycles in a way that non-Muslims in the West are not, due to, well, the five times daily prayer. Each prayer is centered on a particular part of the diurnal cycle. And then there's the annual cycle of Ramadan, where people fast during daylight hours completely, no food, drink, sex, or anything during daylight hours for a whole month. And that really ties people into the sort of lunar annual cycle, which changes a little bit compared to the solar annual cycle. So if you're a Muslim or in Muslim culture, you're really you're living in natural cycles more so than if you're just living a normal life in Western culture.
Yeah, that's why the Arabs were so advanced astronomy and also astrology to the extent that they did in the medieval period. I mean, they had to pick times for prayer. They had to, you know, time the beginning of the month. They perfected the astrolabe. They did all these things.
And it was interesting. It was kind of a sacred science. If you look at some of these astrolabes that they made, they're really beautiful objects of art, not just scientific instruments.
You know, astrolabe is the name of perhaps the best astrological software company in the country, but they were unable to get astrolabe.com for their URL because it was taken by an Islamic book publisher.
Really?
They're alabe.com.
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
Right. Well. So maybe we could touch on the Mayan calendar then, which, as you say, is a more cyclical kind of calendar. What strikes me that it's quite amazing that they're keeping track of time in these long counts, which last a little over 3,000 years.
Well, the long count is, in my view, it's 5,125 years, which is 1/5 of the precession of the equinoxes cycle. Now, there's no one fact anywhere that said that from the Maya that says that the long count is 1/5 of is based on precession. No one has found an inscription yet that says the Maya knew of that precession or a writing. Of course, only 4 books survived the great book burning.
Now, wait. What is precession of the equinox?
Okay, the Earth has 3 primary motions. It has rotation, which is the day. It has revolution, it goes around the sun, which is the year. And then its axis has a wobble to it.
Right.
And it's like a top. And if you have like the axis of the earth as the top, what the top is spinning on, the centerpiece, it traces a circle in the north over 26,000 years. And right now, the pole star, Polaris, is located very near it, but it won't be in a few thousand years. That we won't, you know. I mean, pole stars change, and most of the time there isn't anything at the pole. But this large 26,000 year cycle seems to have been known by a lot of ancient peoples. The Egyptians knew it, and it's very likely the Maya knew it, but it wasn't written down that way. So what we're doing is what I'm doing, and other people have done as well. Terence McKenna and John Major Jenkins and a few other people who have been interested in this sort of thing have just looked at the obvious. Well, if you have 26,000 years, then 1/5 of it is 5,125, roughly, and that's the long count.
Well, that sounds like a little too much to be a coincidence to me, but then again, I am one of these notorious conspiracy theorists, according to Wikipedia. So ostensible coincidences always raise my eyebrows. We'll be back in a moment. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm talking with Bruce Schofield. He's the author of The Long and Short of the Mayan Calendar and 12 books. We'll be right back. The Dynamic Duo Show right here on GCNLive.com. I'm Kevin Barrett, and hey, revolution, that's only 1 of 3 cyclical motions of the Earth. There's also rotation and the 26,000-year wobble cycle, and that does appear to be related to the long count, the 5,125-year time track kept by the Maya that is ending on December 21st, 2012. My guest today is Bruce Schofield. He's an astrologist, an author of 12 books on astrology, and author also of The Long and Short of the Mayan Calendar, published in The Mountain Astrologer a couple of years back. And, you know, before we jump back into the Mayan long count, Bruce, I can't help but mention, since I did, you know, let you, I admitted that I am called a conspiracy theorist on Wikipedia because I sometimes find that coincidences may not be coincidental. And there are other folks in the 9/11 truth community who think that the dates picked for massive false flag terror events or other phenomena that are related to that are not purely coincidental. Well, for instance, September 11th itself, 9/11, well, that does give us the three numbers that you were supposed to dial in the event of a terrible, grave emergency in order to summon help from the government, your surrogate parent figure. It's a perfect date if somebody wanted to terrify people and make them run to their government for protection, even if the government had secretly done it. Likewise, we just passed 8/8/08, August 8th, and some people are suggesting that that'll go down in history as the beginning of World War III, because that was the date that all hell broke loose over in Georgia. What's your take on the possible significance of these kinds of numbers? Have you looked at this at all or not?
Well, now we're entering the category of numerology.
Exactly.
And it's a very, very interesting topic. I think there, like I said before, there's a lot more going on than we can possibly know. Right? That being said, I'm interested in science. I'm interested in boundaries and focusing on a few things. As you know, in regard to numerology, I think that you can get lost in it. It definitely is a way of working a kind of positive paranoia, but that's not to say that there's nothing to it and it's just imagination.
I would not throw it out.
I would not, in other words, numerology to me is something that is extremely complex and brings us into the fields of consciousness, into the fields of the collective mind, and consequently bridges these gaps, into areas that we could call maybe synchronicity, connectedness on very large scales.
Right.
So it happens. I mean, people see certain numbers and they get embedded in their consciousness, and then they kind of, those numbers have a sort of creative power of their own in the person's life. It's very strange. But there, you go back to Pythagoras. He's the father of numerology in the West. And, for him, everything was number. Everything could be reduced to number. And we have to see him as an important figure in science, too, because it was when, mathematics was applied to experiments that we started having the key components of modern science. Galileo put it all together. But a lot of that goes back to Pythagoras. And
right.
He was a numerologist in a way, too.
Right. And some of the most interesting thinkers in history have been numerologists. Ibn al-Arabi, the great Muslim theosophist, is one example of somebody who is apparently interested in numerology. I think the working hypothesis among my 9/11 truth comrades who are taken by this is that they think that there is some sort of group, the group that is behind the what some have called the Global Domination Project, this attempt at a world takeover by the U.S., British, Israeli power group and the financiers behind them, that the elite in that group is actually sending messages within the group by the dates that they pick for certain kinds of actions. And so that position is not that there's any significance in these dates, just that this particular group that's choosing these dates thinks that there's some kind of significance or is marking their territory the way gangs do.
Yeah, one of the books I wrote is a book called Day Signs, Native American Astrology from Ancient Mexico. I pulled it out, I guess, around 18 or 19 years ago. It's out of print now. But I've gotten over the years many, many requests for the book from prison inmates in California and Arizona, New Mexico and Texas. They're all Hispanic. And they say they want this book to know, learn more about their heritage. And for a long time, I was sending them out. A lot of them didn't have any money. I just sent it to them feeling sorry for them. And, went through all the rules. He pasted this label on the front and so on and so. But then I saw this TV show, maybe it was 60 Minutes, and it turns out that these inmates that were communicating with each other using the symbolism of the ancient Aztecs. So they were using my book probably as an encyclopedia of all these different Mexican signs and symbols to communicate with each other, under the guise of, learning their native culture. But maybe not. Maybe some of them were really genuinely interested in you don't know, but there was definitely some that were doing that. And since that time, I've kind of ignored these requests.
you don't want to be helping develop a secret code language for the gangs.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Well, you know, getting back to the Mayan calendar, it is quite fascinating. This long count went from 3114 BCE up through it ends in December 21st, 2012. And that seems to correspond with most of what we think of as civilization.
Yeah, the period around 3000 BC was apparently a very formative time. The Kali Yuga calendar in India is dated to, you know, within 15 or 20 years of that. It's very close. Stonehenge went up, and Old Kingdom in Egypt, and a lot of things were happening. The Sumerians and writing. There was some climate change. There were major climate events that happened at that time that got people moving. And when you have people moving around, you get a lot of creativity, and you have problems, and necessity is the mother of invention. So things were stirred up at that point. I think it got colder in a lot of places. There's even evidence in South America now, some of the origins of Andean civilization were around that time. The end date, though, is the significant one, and that's that, you know, you've heard of the Age of Aquarius. Right.
I sure have.
So what that is, the vernal equinox, which is an abstract point in space that's located by the intersection of the Earth's orbital plane around the Sun with the plane of the Earth's equator. They're tilted to each other by 23.5 degrees, you know, the tilt of the globe. And that point, which is the beginning of the zodiac, the tropical zodiac, 0 degrees Aries, precesses against the zodiac and moves back a degree every 72 years in the zodiac. So now it's somewhere in Pisces, and you know exactly when it enters Aries, we don't know. But it's based on a division of the 26,000-year precession cycle by 12 signs. You know, there was the age of Aries, and now we're in the age of Pisces, which you know maybe started 2,000 years ago. There's a lot of disagreement as to exactly what the timing is. Well, the Maya did the same kind of thing. They divided the precession cycle instead of into twelfths, into fifths. Now, again, this is kind of speculative, but it's very logical if you look at the data. There's no one text that said that. Uh-oh, I hear the song again. I hear the Beatles.
Yep, that means we are heading into yet another break. That's our kind of cosmic cycle on this show. Preceded by, we have this interesting rhythm of talk and commercials. Then we're going to have to sit through a horrible news broadcast. Not just because the news is horrible, but the broadcast itself leaves a lot to be desired. But hey, there's all kinds of good talk on GCN, including on this show, and we'll be back for some more of it with Bruce Schofield after that horrible news broadcast at the top of the hour. So stick around. Welcome back. You're listening to the second hour of today's Dynamic Duo Show. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm on here at GCNLive.com every Monday and Friday. Co-host Jim Fetzer, with whom I do not always agree, comes on Tuesdays through Thursdays. Today I'm talking about a whole new topic, at least to me, that is astrology, with Bruce Schofield, the author of The Long and Short of the Mayan Calendar, and 12 books and numerous articles on astrology. He's a smart guy with a B.A. in history, M.A. in social science, this is a fascinating conversation. I'm really glad I had you on, Bruce. We were talking about the Mayan calendar, and it is interesting that, as you say, this latest long count, which began in 3114 B.C.E. and is scheduled to end on December 21st, 2012, almost seems to bracket civilization. You know, given a lot of people now are, you know, thinking that we're kind of, you know, facing a crisis that could conceivably end civilization, whether it's World War III beginning with Bush's invasion of Iraq and escalating into Europe with this craziness in Georgia on 8-8-08, or in a slightly larger perspective, the ecological crisis as humanity overpopulates. many folks think that we don't have a lot of years left, and so if you kind of roughly bracket 3114 BCE and 2012, many people would say, wow, coincidentally, that could be exactly, how long civilization lasts. And there are a lot of folks who think the end of the world is coming in 2012. What's your take on that kind of apocalyptic paranoia?
Well, as a good astrologer, I'm really an advocate of free will. To me, astrology is a body of knowledge. As I defined it earlier, it's a mapping technique for dynamic systems. But it provides us with additional information in regard to where we are at any given point in time as individuals or collectives. With that knowledge, we then can exercise our free will more effectively. We're always limited and constrained by what we don't know. And, people that, complain about astrology as limiting free will are really clueless about the subject. It's a shame. It gives us an opportunity to exercise free will. So in the case of the Mayan calendar, one of my arguments is that the long count, which is the academic name for the Mayan calendar, what's popularly called the Mayan calendar, is a kind of astrology because it's based on real astronomical motions. And then there's this interpretive component to it. But, having said that it's a type of astrology, we can then look at 2012 as being a turning point date of some sort. And then we could be creative with it. We can look at it and say, it doesn't mean we're all going to die. It doesn't have to mean that. I think that we can collectively go crazy and make that the case. But I like to see it as a marker, like an alarm clock of some sort in time. And, it's an indication that, maybe things are getting serious. Maybe the theater is filled to capacity. And we should start doing something about it. And, there are a lot of people that have been aware that we have problems, like we have overpopulation, we have invasive species and pollution and, global heating and so on. We have all these things going on. We've known this for many years. Some people were doing something about it a long time ago, and many more are jumping on the bandwagon today. And maybe in retrospect, 100 years from now, we'll look back and we'll say that 2012 was around the time where humanity got its act together and said, we can't be running on the programs that we've been running on so far because it's killing us and it's killing the planet. That's the way I would like to look at it as. That's the way I would like to see it. I would like to see 2012 as an alarm clock, an indication that, maybe we should get serious and change some of the things that are going on and, become a better, more responsible species on this planet. Now, whether that happens or not is another matter. And I think it all comes down to people doing things and getting the word out and so on. It's tough. It's a tough call. I mean, people are mesmerized by television and internet and, fast food and so on. It's going to take a lot to wake enough people up. And maybe it will take some economic and, geological events over the next, say, 10 or 15 years to really shake things up. If we had two or three more Katrinas, everybody in this country would be on the global warming bandwagon. But, we need these kinds of things sometimes to wake people up. And maybe they will converge around that time.
Well,
I'm not predicting it as a specific point in time. If you want to get technical, as an astrologer, a real astrologer gets technical. And what's going on is that the winter solstice point, in Western astrology, we use the vernal equinox, and it moves back against the constellations. It's in Pisces now. It's moving to Aquarius, mm-hmm. The age of Aquarius. Well, the Maya used the winter solstice, and it's moving across the galactic equator, the galaxy, which is, we see the galaxy as the Milky Way. And if you draw a plane through the middle of it, the equator of it, mm-hmm. Right, that's where the winter solstice point is crossing. And
well, that brings me to something I wanted to bring up before, Bruce, which is that somebody I met and talked about this with, who is convinced that the world is ending in 2012, thinks that the galaxy exerts a tremendous amount of gravitation through its plane of rotation. That galaxy is pretty flat, So all that matter is on a particular plane, and that as we cross that plane, he thinks that this gravitation will cause the Earth's electromagnetic field to somehow disappear or reverse or radically change, and also this will somehow cause earthquakes and tidal waves beyond the wildest imaginings.
Yeah. Well, you know, there isn't a kind of alignment taking place, although if you think about it, it would seem logical that it would be more powerful when the equinox gets there, which is in another 7,000 years or so. That being said, what I was getting to is that the actual mathematical, you know, mathematically exact crossing point was in 1999. That's when the winter solstice point crossed the galactic equator. But the Maya weren't specifically interested in that. They were interested in when it crossed near to the dark band in the galaxy. There's this dark cloud that kind of obscures things, and it's long. And it's mythologically, it's where humanity was said to have originated. It's like a vaginal opening in the Milky Way. And they were interested in when that occurs, which is around now, you know, 2012 roughly. I mean, they were in the ballpark. They didn't get it exactly. And if you're talking about the sun itself crossing over there, the sun is 30 minutes of arc wide, so it would take any number of years. One important point, the winter solstice point does not cross over the galactic center. That's 3 degrees away from the ecliptic, you know, the path of the sun. So it never really hits the galactic center. It crosses the galactic equator. And it did so in 1999.
And the world didn't end.
Right. People thought it would in 2000, and they had Y2K events.
That's right. People have been thinking the world is going to end for quite some time. It seems to be a kind of a constant, especially of Western culture. I think we might have a caller. Is there a caller? Hello?
Hey there.
Hey, hi. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Mike from Kentucky.
Okay, Mike, we'll bring you back on after the break. Sorry, I brought you on at exactly the moment when the music started up. So you'll have to sit through one more cosmic cycle of commercials. We'll be back in a moment. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm talking to Bruce Schofield, author of 12 books and numerous articles, a practicing astrologer, and he shall return in just a moment. So stick around.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Just anybody.
Help!
You know I need someone.
Help!
When I was younger, so much younger than today,
I never needed
anybody's help in any way.
Now
these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured.
Now I find
a change of mind,
I'll open up the doors.
Help me if you can, I'm feeling down.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Dynamic Duo Show. I'm Kevin Barrett, and today I'm talking about astrology and the Mayan calendar, which appears to be a kind of astrological construct, with Bruce Schofield. He's the author of 12 books and many articles on the subject. He was recommended to me by scientist Lynn Margulis, one of the most interesting minds on the planet, so I knew he'd be good, and he's not disappointing me. So, Bruce, we do have on the line Mike from Kentucky with a question. So, Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you back. It's good. You're one of my favorite regular callers, Mike.
Hey, super cool. Thanks. I'm on my way out to the 11th Street action, but I wanted to take just a minute to call. I'm enjoying the conversation very much. I've got a kind of a scientific, analytical bent to my thinking, but I've come across this stuff, a lot of different things, really, that show me there are a lot of things going on that science has no explanation for yet. I mean, maybe we will someday. I think I've referred you to the experiments done at the University of Arizona by the Human Energy Systems Laboratory on Christopher Robinson, the Dream Detective, and the afterlife experiments and so on. I've had experiences in my own life that more along the lines of Jung and synchronicity and stuff. But anyway, I've basically two quick questions, or maybe one other little observation too. I really like what you have to say about destiny or fate versus free will. And I came across a neat passage in a chess history book called The Immortal Game, where it was one of the reasons why chess was invented, because apparently this king preferred free will over fate. And in chess, you know, you can choose your moves. I think that's kind of cool. I go for that.
That's right. You don't roll any dice in chess.
Right, yeah. God doesn't play dice. The Mayan calendar, I read something someplace that said that what they did was they went out about 5,000 years or so and stopped, rather than just repeat the cycle, that the cycle begins again at that ending point. Any thoughts on that, Mr. Schofield?
Well, if my inscriptions do show that the long count, 5,125-year period, was embedded in larger cycles. So the idea that it ends itself, it terminates in 2012, is not consistent. The assumption would then be that it's like the odometer turning over, and this odometer turning over is actually a smaller component in larger odometers. The Maya had cycles within cycles.
I see. So there is some accuracy to it, but it's maybe not the entire...
No, it's a long cycle, 5,125 years, but they had other measurements. The long count is measured in what are called baktuns. And baktuns are composed of katuns, 20 katuns. Katuns are they're 20-year periods roughly, are composed of tuns, which are 1-year periods roughly, and so on. So they're, you know, cycles building on cycles. And I'm not sure if I'm understanding you correctly, but I think what you're trying to get at is that is the long count, you know, a terminal, is 2012 a terminal date, or is it embedded in something larger? And the answer is it's just, you know, one ending in a much larger construct of time.
Yeah.
Of cyclic time.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, what I picked up basically from what I read, that it wasn't like end of world, it was like end of cycle and restart cycle. You know,
yeah, it's like the end of July, and then you go into August, and it's in the context of the year.
Right, and you could choose to start the year on a solstice or an equinox, or really on any other day. It would just, you know, some places seem to make more sense.
Exactly. I mean, you know, we have to nail down a few reference points if we're going to make any sense out of life.
Right.
To me, astrology is a lot like surveying. You know, you have to have a few pins in somewhere against which you measure everything else. And
right.
The most reliable pins, I'm using surveyor talk, are the astronomical cycles.
Cool. Well, it's interesting, Mike, you mentioned today is the 11th of the month, which is a pin that the 9/11 Truth Movement uses to gather once a month and get out there and have a kind of a visibility action for 9/11 Truth, hand out free DVDs, carry some signs, do civil informationing, talk to people. And it's funny how that just sort of developed in the movement.
Yeah, it's some people were doing it on Tuesdays too, so they get out more often because it happened to fall on a Tuesday. I guess my other question was astrology and numerology. I came across something one time on the web, you know, it's like they were like merging these things and they had numbers for not just like an astrological sign, like I'm a Sagittarius, but also I would be assigned some kind of numerical value based on my latitude, longitude, time of birth, and all that.
Well, there's some people who see astrology as like a very complex form of numerology, and they'll say that numerology in the final analysis is the key to understanding, going back to Pythagoras, but. There are connections between the two. There are very strong connections. The signs numbered, you know, from 1 to 12. You know, you're Sagittarius, that's 9. You know, there's the ninth house in the horoscope. There's 9 degrees. There are all sorts of patterns that you can find if you boil down your astrological data to numbers, it's there. It's in there somewhere. It's like I was saying before. There's this area that's called synchronicity or coincidence, and skeptics try to debunk it as a product of just the human mind. And I'm interested in this, but not as interested as I am in astrology. And my conclusion is that I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. There's probably something going on, but I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah.
There are more coincidences going on than I think can be explained logically, but other people would tend to disagree.
Mm-hmm.
And I just haven't studied it enough to come to my own conclusion, and what I've seen leads me to believe that there is some kind of connectivity going on between individuals and between collectives that allow for certain patterns to emerge more frequently, like numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, that's a good scientific attitude, you know, to have an open mind, not throw the baby out with the bathwater, being okay, you know, at peace with incomplete knowledge until more evidence comes in and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think being at peace with incomplete knowledge is a great way to go.
Yeah. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks, Mike, from Kentucky. That was a good call. We'll be back in a moment with some more talk. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm talking with Bruce Schofield, the author of The Long and Short of the Mayan Calendar and 12 books and many other articles on astrology and related topics. We'll be back in a bit.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man.
Dynamic Duo Show. I'm Kevin Barrett. Today I'm talking about astrology and related topics with Bruce Schofield, an astrologer who was recommended to me by Lynn Margulis, one of the most interesting talk show guests I've ever been privileged to have, and you know, one of my favorite people. And Bruce, I wonder about the, since you're a practicing astrologer as well as something of a theoretician. And, you know, this is something that I don't really know much about. I know there are people who consult astrologers and charts when they do important ventures, especially when they begin important ventures. And I just how useful is this? I mean, if there's really you know, useful information being gleaned from this, you know, you could almost compare somebody who doesn't do that, like me, you know, to someone who's, you know, walking around in the forest in the dark, you know, bumping into trees, whereas somebody who is doing this would have a light that would allow them to know when is the best time to go where. And to what extent is practical astrology really a useful tool of leading one's life?
It's very helpful when you find yourself banging into walls.
Well, we all
do. You find yourself out of step with the dance, you know.
Interesting. So it's kind of a matter of getting back into the flow with the cosmic harmonies and so on?
Yeah, you know, it raises, your question raises an interesting angle on this. There are two fundamental ways of relating to the universe, I suppose. One is to participate with it, and one is to objectify it and not participate. And we're living in an age that's been shaped by the scientific, quote-unquote, revolution, in which we have like this like non-participatory consciousness. We've objectified things. But astrology comes out of an age where people are participating with the universe, with the world around them. And electional astrology, the branch of astrology that deals with picking times to do things, would be a good example of it. Alchemy is a good example of participating consciousness. Right? So what happens is sometimes people get so out of whack, their lives, you know, externally are not meshing very well with their internal lives. And that's when an astrology reading might be useful, you know, depending on who you get it from. I mean, in astrology, there are certifications, but a lot of people don't pay attention to them because in the world at large, astrology is regarded as a joke. But there are certifications, and I recommend for anybody that wants to have an astrology reading, I mean, do some research, go online, look up people, ask what kind of certification they have, what are their qualifications. There's a large organization called National Council for Geocosmic Research that offers a very good certification program. And if you talk to somebody that's gone through that, they'll at least have exposed themselves to all the different traditions and have a good idea of what they're doing. But the answer to your question is that it's good to have a reading when things are not working for you. It's an adjustment. It's like you're driving in your car and you get lost. That's when you pull out the map. You don't throw the map across your windshield unless you want to keep your car cool, when it's parked. But, you don't want to block your view with all this information. Astrology is extremely informative, and you don't want to overuse it.
That's an interesting take. That's kind of the Jungian theory of dreams, is that dreams are generated out of excess and lack of balance, that whenever some part of us is getting unbalanced, then the dream will generate sort of a compensating symbol or image in the other direction to let us know that. And it sounds like you're suggesting that the same thing would be true, that astrology would help when one's out of balance.
Yeah. I mean, you go to a chiropractor or a psychotherapist or a physical therapist or whatever when you're not functioning right. Astrology is not for every day. Although there are people like me, I've been in astrology since 1967, and I'm a person that's very, very interested in the subject, how it works, and I do my own personal experiments. I've been participating in a sense, and I've been objectifying and looking at it and writing on it and speaking on it. So that's different. I'm engaged in it. I'm like a professional, like a musician. It's playing, living music all the time. And not like the ordinary person. And they're, the musician is coming home late and hanging out in hotels and diners and bars or whatever. It's a very different kind of life. You don't want to recommend it to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, I think astrology has a use.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, it's kind of intriguing to me. And I wonder what your take would be on the kind of sense. Many people think that our social life right now in the USA especially is out of whack in really quite a lot more than it has been in the past. The outrageous lies of this administration that we've had for the past 7 years, and along with the lies, we have these wars, these unprovoked wars of aggression. In the past, since World War II, since the Nazi invasion of Poland, when countries have tried to invade other countries, they always pretend that they're invited. It's kind of the, as La Rochefoucauld said, hypocrisy is a tribute that vice pays to virtue. And nations have been paying that tribute until Bush invaded Afghanistan and Iraq, unprovoked naked wars of aggression. So people have a sense that things are politically really out of whack, the 9/11 inside job being kind of the ultimate symbol of that. Do you have any wisdom that you can share based on your knowledge of astrology on the sense that the clock is out of joint or the time is out of joint?
Well, we have to start with the fact that, we are primates, and we're social creatures, social mammals, and we have mammalian territorial politics operating all the time. And we have rank. We're very motivated to rank ourselves, and there are pecking orders. And you get big populations, you have to have very powerful people at the top. And very powerful people will do crazy things. And they'll exploit another innate quality of primates, which is tribalism. And, us versus them. We have, you get a group together and they find something common that they can all identify with, and then everyone else is the enemy, And so you get these massive populations producing, very high-powered individuals, and you have all sorts of problems. Now, these individuals that seek these high, powerful positions are not seekers of enlightenment. They're not people who are introspective by nature. They're people who are by nature inclined towards power. In astrology, that has to do with the planet Pluto. And, this is a problem. They get out of control. The bigger the population, the stronger the leader, the less likely they are, you know, to be introspective and wise. I mean, we have exceptions, but very often they don't get very far. They may in the long run. It's like the Dalai Lama. You know, he may get somewhere in the long run, but he's certainly he's not coming from a he's not coming from a place of power like other national presidents or leaders are. He has power, but he's exerting it in a very different kind of way, in an enlightened kind of way.
Well, what could we do to see to it that when 2012 comes around, if not before, we can get more introspective, enlightened types into power and put an end to this process that has seen these huge tribal primate pack hierarchies propelling these horrific power freaks to the top of their power pyramid.
Yeah, testosterone poisoning in the White House.
Right. Do you have any ideas about, you know, that? Because that seems to me to be the kind of transformation that we need if the species is going to survive and get into a sustainable kind of rhythm on this planet. We're going to have to solve that problem, take care of this problem of the psychopaths rising to the top of the pack hierarchy.
It calls for a very rare type of individual.
Okay, well, let's hope that a few of those show up before too long.
Yeah.
Kevin Barrett, I'm talking with Bruce Schofield, an astrologer and the author of 12 books, many articles recommended by the brilliant scientist Lynn Margulis. We'll be back for one more segment after the break. Here, the Patriot Act and the long line of unconstitutional rollbacks in our freedoms post 9/11 have put us back in kind of a USSR framework, and maybe we can bring that national security state down with the internet, the way the Russians and the USSR were able to bring down their communist regime with the mimeograph machine, a much more primitive technology. And that's what we're trying to do here at the Dynamic Duo Show, using the internet to broadcast hard-hitting, truth-telling radio. And today we're exploring a slightly different topic. This is the Astrology Day, the 11th of the month, a significant day in the 9/11 Truth Cosmic Calendar. We're 1 month away from the anniversary of 9/11. And we're talking about cycles and anniversaries and the meaning that people find in cyclical and linear time with Bruce Schofield. And Bruce, we were just discussing before the break this problem of certain kinds of authoritarian personalities, shall we say, who seem to have a real propensity for climbing power hierarchies. Many of these people are not particularly talented at anything. Look at our current White House, for example. Bush and Cheney both are quite mediocre personalities, and yet both, especially Cheney, you know, these guys have a certain talent for using their sheer control freak stamina to climb power hierarchies. And, you know, we need to find a way of creating social systems that don't devolve to the point where these kinds of characters, you know, seize vast amounts of power and use that power in destructive ways. How do you think we're going to get there from here to a better political world?
Well, a couple things first, and to relate all this to astrology, Western astrology. Astrologers like to track the movement of the planet Pluto through the signs as an indicator of how power manifests on the in the collective. And it's been passing through the sign Sagittarius for quite a while, since the 90s. And in fact, as when Pluto actually changes signs, that period right around the days or weeks that it changes is often very significant. And it is now ending its long period in Sagittarius. I think it was like in 92 or 93. It changed, and it's now moving into Capricorn. Now, what's significant about Sagittarius, it's a sign that has to do with religion, philosophy, ideology, strong opinions, and so on. And a lot of astrologers like to point out that this period that we've been through was one characterized by very strong surges of religious ideas entering into politics, strong ideologies. Now, I think that you can explain the Bush administration pretty much by saying, recognizing that these people were believers, and not just religion. They're believers in this like neocon philosophy.
Yeah,
very strong believers, and to the point where when you have a strong belief, nothing else matters. You can't bring in logic to somebody that believes something.
Well, the neocons are a weird paradox because they're ultra true believers, but what they actually believe in is nothing. They're nihilists, and they think they're so frightened by that they feel that the masses have to be brainwashed by some kind of a powerful big lie in the form of a religion, which they think are all false. And then they themselves grasp on to some kind of, to a very extremist kind of militant, militaristic ideology of how to govern countries. It's a very strange, paradoxical and deranged political philosophy.
Well, it comes out of a lot of fear. You're right. But what's happening now is Pluto is changing signs and moving into Capricorn. Now, if anybody wants to know how this works, don't ask me. Pluto's not even classified as a planet anymore. It's a dwarf planet.
Yeah, well, I'm so far away from power that I think my planet is probably Goofy rather than Pluto.
You may have a strong Neptune.
Yeah, there you go. That's probably
the planet of idealism.
That's probably it. I'll blame that, when my wife has given me a hard time, I'll say, well, it's Neptune's fault.
Yeah, it has to do with paranoia.
Which is not
necessarily bad. It's paranoia. It is positive, which is it's the perception of things in amongst a lot of loose information, and it usually is found in a person who has like a very open mind or a mind that's taking in vast quantities of information,
mm-hmm.
in contrast to the specialist. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the Pluto moving into Capricorn should signify some very significant changes in power, how it's dealt with collectively, and so on. And Capricorn is a far more realistic sign. It could be tougher, though, and I think what we're going to see are leaders that realize that we're going to have some very strong rules and very strong government in order to accomplish our collective goals.
Well, that doesn't sound good for me. I'm running for Congress as a libertarian.
Well, it could be good for things like global cooperation on greenhouse gas emissions, because you have to have stronger governmental structures in place. They don't have to strangle people. But we just can't rely on volunteerism to make things happen when we're about to go off a cliff.
Example. That's what you mean by strong government. But right now the government is keeping track of our every move. They're watching us from satellites. They've rolled back all of the constitutional protections. Getting ready to inject us with microchips. How much worse could it get?
Well, when you get a lot of people, you have crowd control problems.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that we can go around and around and around. We're always going to come back to too many people.
Yeah.
We're just ridiculous. And we have ideologies and religions and beliefs that tend to promote, ways of living that don't cut back on population. So I think that in itself generates stronger controls from the government. Otherwise, it's just like a madhouse.
I don't see that much madhouse. I mean, I look back to, when things were out of control in the 60s, when, the Trilateral Commission was formed in order to deal with this crisis of too much democracy. And to me, that looks better. I mean, it seemed to me there was more hope, and it was just a more interesting time to live. Sure, there was more chaos, but, now we're all buttoned down and fascistic. I don't see any problem with chaos whatsoever in the USA right now.
Well, two different kinds of chaos. I'm talking about a more serious kind of chaos. The 60s were free in a lot of ways, and the problems that the government perceived were really relatively minor. We have, very serious problems going on, devastation of forests and we have problems on a climatological level. That's what's
right.
going on.
Right.
And that's what I mean by the need for more government control in order to regulate all this. Otherwise, you know, we're all going to pay for, you know, some country somewhere else that's doing something that they really shouldn't be doing, and they don't know any better, and how do you stop them?
Mm-hmm.
So there probably will be more wars, and there probably will be more governmental rules and whatnot. I'm not saying that it all has to be bad, but I think that we are moving into a state of global emergency. And how that's managed will be very interesting. 2012, as a date, seems to interestingly fall into this period where perhaps some kind of emergency may develop, and it may cause us to change things. I'm not predicting the end of the world. I'm not predicting, you know, a totalitarian government. But I think we're going to see more cooperation on the world between governments out of necessity.
That doesn't sound like the end of the world.
No. But that's going to be the difference between Pluto and Sagittarius, which is governmental power and individual power based on ideologies and beliefs and so on, versus Pluto and Capricorn for the next 15 years, which is power based on absolute necessity, very real, practical necessity.
Well, that would explain why there's a war in Georgia right now over that oil pipeline, the only oil pipeline out of the Caspian Basin that is not under Russian control. That's
right.
A tough, realistic reason for a war. Well, hey, Bruce, it's been great having you on. I really appreciate the conversation. Where can people go to find out more about your work?
I have a website that I share with my friend Barry. It's called onereed.com, onereed.com.
Onereed.com.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, once again, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, and I did learn something.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure as well.
All right. Take care, Bruce.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Bruce Schofield, astrologer, on the web at onereed.com. We'll be back on Friday. More great talk. So stick around right here on GCNLive.com.